This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. There's a new ad campaign running on Colorado's airwaves about hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, for oil and gas.
Do you know where we can get the energy to heat our homes, power our businesses, keep us moving? The answer is under our feet. A mile under, in fact. Through environmentally safe fracking, we're tapping into vast shale reserves under our state. It's a process tried and true for more than 60 years.
Coloradans for Responsible Energy Development, or CRED, is airing radio and TV ads on stations across the state. The nonprofit is funded by Anadarko Petroleum and Noble Energy. The media blitz inspired a counter campaign from the Center for Western Priorities, a conservation group. We're going to truth squad both of these campaigns with Abram Lustgarten. He's an investigative reporter who covers energy and the environment for ProPublica. Lustgarten has written extensively about fracking since 2008. Abram, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the ad we just heard. So it contends that fracking has been tried and true for 60 years. How accurate is that claim?
Well, I suppose the first kind of fracking did occur around 60 years ago. Among other early experiments, they detonated a nuclear bomb underground in Ruleson, Colorado. So it's been tried, but it is nothing like the kind of fracking that they're doing today. The technology that they've developed over the last 7, 8, 10 years is unprecedented and entirely different. And that's evidenced by all of the new drilling that's happening as a result. They would have loved to have reached all these resources, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, but they didn't have the fracking technology to do it.
I guess the point is, if they had had the technology they had now, we would have seen a boom years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see. So fair to say that some form of fracking has gone on for 60 years, but certainly not the form that it takes today.
Yeah, that's okay. Right.
This ad also calls fracking environmentally safe. And on CRED's website, again, this is the organization behind the ad, it contends that the EPA has never found an incident of water contamination due to fracking. How accurate is that statement?
Well, I don't think it's accurate at all, but it's a semantic technicality. So usually what proponents of drilling mean when they say that there's never been an accident from fracking is that the actual stage of drilling a well where it is fractured, where the pressure is built up to a certain degree where it actually cracks the rock, that has not been scientifically linked to water contamination. That's a very specific and narrow definition that really excludes any other problems with the wells, frequent migration of gases or fluids along the cement bore, or spills on the surface, or mishandling of the materials, or any of those things. And that debate aside, there are not a lot, but a few cases where accidents have actually been linked to fracking. EPA documents link an accident in West Virginia way back in 1987 to hydraulic fracturing chemicals. And more recently, the EPA had been studying groundwater contamination in Pavilion, Wyoming, went forward with that research for about 4 years before issuing a draft report that concluded that the water contamination people were experiencing in Pavilion was linked to hydraulic fracturing. The EPA stopped that study before they issued a final report, but for all intents and purposes, they had reached their conclusion.
Okay, so I guess the point there is, according to a very narrow definition, there have not been many incidents of water contamination. But if you broaden the definition of what water contamination is and how that can occur and at which levels, the numbers would increase a lot, a little?
The numbers would increase quite a bit. I think it's a fair way to look at this to just say, well, how much water contamination is there from drilling involving hydraulic fracturing and the handling of all those chemicals that hydraulic fracturing requires?
Yeah, good. Okay.
And if you look at it that way, just in the state of Colorado alone, the State Oil and Gas Conservation Commission makes spill statistics and accident statistics available on their website, and you'll find thousands over the last decade, several hundred a year, and they happen almost daily.
Well, speaking of water, let's hear a bit of the latest ad from the Center for Western Priorities, the environmental advocacy group.
Just about every day in Colorado, there's a chemical spill caused by drilling and fracking. And once a week on average, a spill contaminates groundwater.
Does that capture what you've just told us, or is that an exaggeration?
No, that pretty much captures what I just was describing. I haven't looked at those numbers recently, but they are very frequent, on the order of several a month, I would think.
But are they environmentally important? I mean, I feel like context is what's missing from a lot of these claims.
Some are and some are not. You have minor spills on the surface that are cleaned up very quickly, cleaned up quite responsibly, don't really go very far and don't really impact very much in terms of health or neighbors or activity or the environment. Those are not particularly significant. You have spills that will seep into groundwater and spills that will get into surface water, into a stream, and flow down probably into the Colorado River in many places in the state. Those can be quite significant depending on how large they are, and there are some that have been large and many that are not. And then when it comes to groundwater contamination, it's interesting because you really get into a realm of scientific uncertainty. There's very little monitoring. There's very little research to understand how changes in water quality affect human use of that groundwater, where those contaminants might go, and what their ultimate impact might be. So you're really just sort of raising a big question mark.
Hmm. What about protection from spills? CRED contends that before a well is fracked, quote, seven separate layers of cement and steel are installed to protect underground sources of drinking water, unquote. Are seven layers of cement added to every well in Colorado?
Well, I've never heard of a place or seen a well that had seven redundant layers of cement and steel. It's true that there are multiple layers, and if a well is built to the best possible design specs, it can be quite safe. There are layers of cement and steel that are supposed to keep contaminants, gas, or chemicals from leaking out. But in many wells, it's one or two layers. And when you get down to a certain depth, maybe a couple hundred feet underground or a couple thousand feet underground, there may be sections of a well with no layering at all. And that's really where some of the danger comes in. Several of the accident sites that I've looked at in the state of Wyoming, for example, had no casing whatsoever at 800 feet or 1,000 feet below ground. And that's a real opportunity for contaminants into groundwater aquifers.
In general, do states require some amount of protective layering?
Almost all states will have some requirement for casing and cementing, which are the technical things that are involved in that layering. It varies greatly from state to state how protective they are. Colorado's rules are generally among the most protective in the country.
These two groups disagree over how much water fracking uses per well. Can you give us a general sense of how much water is required? Maybe that differs from well to well. And do you know, Abram, if oil and gas and the boom we're seeing, is it drives up the price of water in Colorado?
Yet the amount of water used varies greatly. A traditional vertical well, the old style well, might use a couple hundred thousand gallons of water, 250 or so. The newest kind of horizontal wells that go down, take a 90-degree turn, and then go horizontally for quite a distance, those wells are just so huge it takes an enormous amount of water to fill them up, and those can use as much as 4 million gallons for a single frack job. Now, the thing is, a lot of these wells are fracked multiple times, could be four times or eight times. So you can see when you have thousands of horizontal wells, especially, that are fracked multiple times, you could be talking about billions of gallons of water.
And is that water reused?
It's really not. From the viewpoint of those concerned with water, this is really the tragic thing. The water that comes back up out of a natural gas well is lumped in with a whole bunch of chemicals and other waste. So it's very polluted. And almost all the time, it is reinjected into the ground into an injection waste well. And those wells essentially permanently entomb that waste very deep underground in the hopes that we never see it again, but definitely not with the intention of using it again. There are, in some cases, Texas is seeing some experimentation with water recycling. There's some promising technologies being developed, but they're on such a small scale that they're not really material at this point.
Can you put the amount of water that the industry is using into some context, though? I mean, I imagine there are a lot of industries that are water intensive. How does oil and gas compare to other industries?
Yeah, the statistics that I've seen put oil and gas drilling behind most other industries. Agriculture, for example, would use far more water than oil and gas drilling, as would most manufacturing. So on a chart ranked, it might fall fairly low. I think what makes the water use from drilling significant in many places is that it happens in rural areas. It happens in places that are water scarce, western Colorado or southern Texas, for example, where on a localized basis, the water use might be much more proportionally significant.
Of course, you're talking in rural areas, I suppose, of dueling factors here. I mean, water is scarce and precious. At the same time, there are farmers and ranchers who are making money because of the oil and gas boom. So, again, it's not cut and dried, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, there's always that tension between, the environmental risks and the economic potential boon, especially in these rural parts of the country and the state where people really need that money and that kind of economic stimulus. You know, most of the people I talk to are looking for whatever that fine line is or the compromise that lets them, you know, reap the most amount of benefit while minimizing the risk, if not completely eliminating that risk.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to continue our fracking fact-checking. This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. You're back with Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. Two dueling ad campaigns in the state focus respectively on the benefits and the risks of fracking. Today, we're truth-squatting some of the claims with Abram Lustgarten of ProPublica. He has written extensively about oil and gas since 2008. So CRED, and again, this is the industry group, contends that fracking fluid is 99.5% water and sand, and the rest, that remaining 0.5%, is a mixture of chemicals similar to household products found under your kitchen sink or in your garage. To be clear, we should say that fracking fluid is the liquid that blasts apart the deep shale to release oil and natural gas. Is CRED's statement about fracking fluid accurate?
Well, it might be accurate, but it's one of the most misleading statements that I hear coming from the oil and gas industry. And the reason is that no scientist that I've ever spoken with, no text that I've ever read or research paper has referred to contaminants in terms of their percentage of volume. What really matters is what portion of a larger volume they make up, how many parts per billion or parts per million they make up. And so many of the most dangerous contaminants that we're concerned with, say benzene, for example, are dangerous at the most minute levels, levels that are maybe 1,000 times smaller than what a half a percentage by volume might equate to. So it's really a misleading statement that's meant to sound small, but in scientific terms could be quite large and quite significant.
You know, under state law, operators have to publish the fracking ingredients they use in each well. And this information is available through a public internet database called FracFocus. How dependable is that website, which is run by an organization that goes by the name Groundwater Protection Council?
Well, FracFocus and what it offers is a vast improvement from the amount of information that was available just a couple of years ago when we really knew nothing, the public knew nothing about what chemicals were being used in hydraulic fracturing. The Groundwater Protection Council used to be aligned with the oil and gas industry, now has excluded them and mostly consists of state oil and gas regulators and similar academics and so forth. The site, It still is a voluntary submission of data. It still excludes the material and the names of chemicals that the companies want to protect the most. It allows for exceptions to protect proprietary data, and the states that would require companies to submit to FracFocus also allow for those exemptions to take place. So the bottom line is we still have holes, smaller than they used to be, but still potentially significant in the amount of information that we have about the chemicals that are being used.
The industry here would say, but these cocktails, if you will, of fluids are proprietary. You know, so in the way that McDonald's might not want to release, you know, the Chicken McNugget recipe, oil and gas companies don't want to release this.
Yeah, I don't know if companies can rightfully claim an absolute right to secrecy, if there's any precedent for that in the business community. I mean, does the FDA not have a right to know what's in the Coke recipe? I think that the public's looking to strike some kind of rational balance here. Perhaps that balance is that regulators, as some people have suggested, have the right to know what's in the fracking cocktails, but the general public may not, and therefore you can preserve the competitive interests of these companies while still preserving the safety and the health of the general public.
Well, let's examine one more claim. This one comes from the environmentalist group. The claim is fracking has been linked to increased air pollution that is hazardous to the health of residents near wells and may contribute to the larger problem of climate change. What do you make of that claim?
There's a whole lot wrapped into that statement.
There is, yeah.
I'd say it's mostly true, okay. but not as simple as it sounds.
Let's break it apart. So increased air pollution that is hazardous to the health of residents near wells.
Yeah, so certainly drilling leads to dramatic increases in air pollution. There's a couple studies out of Western Colorado supporting this. You know, back in the early days of this debate in central Wyoming around the town of Pinedale, they were seeing worse air quality days than the city of Los Angeles. Ozone levels were going through the roof, and there were really aggressive federal and state government efforts to cut back on the amount of air pollution. So that's pretty much undisputed. What isn't quite clear, like any kind of environmental epidemiology, is exactly how and how much that affects people's health. We generally know it's bad. There's lots and lots of examples of people in drilling areas with quite severe health problems, whether it's skin lesions or nerve disorders or neurological disorders, and they're fairly consistent. But from a scientific perspective, they're anecdotal still at this point, and that's a little bit sticky to try to figure that out.
Okay, and to the second part of this claim, and may contribute to the larger problem of climate change.
Yeah, so here they're talking about the question of how much methane leaks out of wells and the pipelines and associated infrastructure when the gas is drilled and then transported. And there's a lot of evidence that says that it could be quite significant. And the thing about methane is that it's at least 21 times, depending on who's counting, more powerful than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas in terms of its potency. It gets kind of technical. It depends on what kind of time frame you're talking about. But if you want to look over a shorter time frame, scientists would say it's 100 times more potent than carbon dioxide. So a little bit of leakage from a gas field is a quite significant contributor to climate change in terms of the overall greenhouse gas load. Now, the debate boils down to how much is actually leaking. There's a lot of private research being done, and there's some public research being done. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has been conducting some research and finding 7 to 9% leak. The EPA has said that number is more like 2 to 3%, which is still quite significant when you're talking about greenhouse gases. And then most recently, there's a study that came out sponsored by a number of gas companies with the environmental group, Environmental Defense Fund, that found that the levels were actually quite low, almost non-existent. The problem with that study, however, is it really just looked at a couple choice wells and is probably a measure of the best case scenario, the best that the oil and gas industry can do to limit emissions, but not necessarily representative of overall practice.
The industry might tell you, hey, you need to look at this in context. So, yes, getting at gas may release greenhouse gases, but it's so much better than the alternative. Coal plants, for instance.
Well, there's really no debate that burning gas is cleaner than burning coal. Far fewer greenhouse gas emissions from the process of burning it, plus you dispense with all the other sort of dangerous particulate matter that goes along with dirty coal. But depending on how you calculate that life cycle analysis, the overall benefit of natural gas might be slimmer than you think. I haven't talked to too many people who would claim that the benefits of drilling for natural gas completely disappear because of the alleged leaks of methane in the field, but they certainly narrow the advantage. And when you add other processes like potentially liquefying that gas, shipping it overseas, and so forth, it is conceivable that you could make gas as dirty as coal in terms of its climate emissions.
Well, finally, there's a push in Colorado from several communities to put a moratorium on drilling until there's more science on fracking and its effects. From your reporting, are there still a lot of unknowns?
Yes, there are many unknowns. We're talking about a whole world, universe of unknowns. And that's part of the problem is that, you know, I think that there was a real sort of headlong dive into this process without really addressing what the potential risks are.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Abram Lustgarten is an investigative reporter for ProPublica. We have links to both fracking ad campaigns from Coloradans for Responsible Energy Development and from the Center for Western Priorities at cpr.org.